Good evening.
Good evening.
Several weeks ago, I wrote a subject on the board back there recommending that someone speak about a particular topic regarding family values, and no one signed up for it. So I signed up for it. I'll write my question on the board. What should children learn? And for someone who doesn't have any children, this may seem like kind of a strange subject for me to select. So I want to begin by offering you some important disclaimers. This sermon is specifically about and only about what children should learn. So a few things that you shouldn't expect me to talk about. I'm not going to talk about how children should learn. I'm not going to talk about how children should be disciplined. I won't be making any recommendations on good parent practices or anything related to specific instructional techniques for a parent. Now, why would I not talk about that? I'd have no credibility at all. I don't know how to raise a child. I haven't raised any children, and so I'm not going to even begin to tell you how to do it. I'm not going to tell Clayton how to raise a child for the same reason I'm not going to tell Clayton how to golf. Frankly, I have no idea. I'll leave that to Clayton. I'm not going to tell Matt how to raise Savannah for the same reason that I'm not going to tell Matt how to fly an airplane. For the same reason I'm not going to tell Ben how to manage a cancer center. Same reason I'm not going to tell Mike Rogers how to build a house. I can't tell you how, and I want you to know that immediately. But everyone should know what. I can't tell you how children learn or how children should be raised, but we all can talk about what children should learn. So that's the first disclaimer. I'm only telling you the what, not the how. Secondly, the sermon is not about everything children should learn. Not everything. No single sermon could ever address that subject. Instead, my goal is to specifically address subjects that are often overlooked or ignored or undermined by the influence of the world. For example, do we need to teach our children to read the Bible? Yes, right? So I'm not going to talk about that. Do we need to teach children that they should go to church? Yes. I'm not going to talk about that either. I think we understand those things. So we won't talk about those sorts of subjects. Children do learn on their own. So I'm going to talk about certain things that a child might not learn on their own unless a parent is proactive about teaching them. Also remember, there's not going to be anything extraordinary about what children should learn. Is there anything a child should learn that an adult also shouldn't learn? Well, of course not. Everything that you and I know as adults, or should know as adults, is something that's probably relevant for a child as well. Everything a child needs to know is something that you and I also need to know. So I came up with three things that I think are worth our time and attention for tonight. The first of which is the idea of sacrifice. A child should learn sacrifice. A child should learn that living like a Christian will absolutely require sacrifice. Is this what the world teaches? Not really. The world teaches that if you desire it, you deserve it. The world teaches that if you want it, you should have it. The world teaches that if you can do something, then you should do it. This is not what the Bible teaches. And if we don't teach children otherwise, they'll only learn what the world teaches. There are numerous examples of this, some big, some small, and all of these are significant. I think Mike Rogers talked about this not too long ago in one of his lessons, and I think some of the things that he said are worth repeating. For example, just one small example, but still significant example. What kind of sacrifices should a child learn that they are going to have to make in their life? First, a child should know, for example, that they're never going to be able to go on trips over the weekend that require them to miss meeting with the church. Such a simple thing, but something that a child is not going to learn on their own. A child should learn that they're just not going to be able to participate in certain clubs or teams. Certain clubs or teams that might require them to do things that are unchristian, like miss church or wear inappropriate clothing. A child should be raised with the understanding that they will make some sacrifices related to their career. For example, there are probably some jobs out there that just don't allow a person to be the kind of Christian that they should be. Growing up, I always knew that I would never get to be an NFL football star. Well, why not? Because NFL people play on Sundays. I go to church on Sundays, which means I had to leave my football career behind me. Now, there's also other examples that are a little bit more realistic. I know of people in the church that voluntarily manage a business that operates on Sunday. And to me, that's a conflict of interest. And to me, that's a sacrifice that someone should make. There's some careers that someone will almost always have to miss church on Sundays. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about everything. I had to miss church on Wednesday night for 3 years. Not because I wanted to, but because I had to, and eventually I got out of that situation. But there are some careers where that's not an option. If you sign up for it, you're going to miss church all the time. When I was growing up, I don't remember my parents teaching me this, but I remember knowing this. I remember growing up that I knew there were certain colleges that I would never be able to attend. One good example is MU. I knew that I would probably never go to MU because there are faithful churches close, but not very close at all. So I knew I would never go there because there wasn't a faithful church nearby. That's the kind of sacrifices a child will have to learn to make. If a child learns to live like a Christian, they'll also need to learn that they'll never be the most popular kid in class. Michael Wohls talked about this a few weeks ago, and I thought it was a very, very good point. A Christian child is not going to be the most popular child in their class. And why is that? Because they're not going to be quite like everyone else. They won't act the same. They won't talk the same. They won't look the same. They won't dress the same. And they're certainly not even going to think the same as other children in the world. If the other kids think they're kind of weird, Christian children shouldn't be alarmed. I think Rick mentioned this last week, that to the world, Christian people are just a little bit odd. They don't make sense to the world. Just like the world really shouldn't make a lot of sense to us sometimes. This is an idea that Christian children should be very comfortable with, that as a part of making sacrifice in their lives to be a child of God, they will also have to sacrifice popularity. They'll realize that part of being a Christian child is being different. And this is a very fundamental idea in the Bible, that sacrifice requires transformation and differentiation from the world. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 is the basic passage on this. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. In this passage, sacrifice is directly connected to transformation, realizing that Christians will not be the same as the rest of the world. The world teaches indulgence. God teaches sacrifice. The world teaches conformation. God teaches transformation. The Christian life is defined by sacrifice. A child that doesn't learn sacrifice won't ever learn how to be a Christian. Now, like I said, I'm not recommending how, and don't let yourself be confused on what I'm suggesting. I don't mean that, you know, every once in a while you should send your child to bed without any dinner so they know what it's like to sacrifice. That's not what I mean. You know, exactly how this happens, I don't know, and I won't make any recommendations, but a child should learn that being a Christian means being different and making sacrifices. Christian children are different, and that's what makes them special. Remember what Jesus said to the Pharisees in John chapter 12, verses 42 and 43? Nevertheless, even among the rulers, John said this about Jesus. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. That passage is closely connected to this subject. Making sacrifice means that we will love God's praise more than the praise that we find in the world. A child should learn sacrifice. Secondly, a child should learn to love the church. A child should learn to love the church. And this subject, of course, has many appendages. Firstly, a child should learn to love the institution. In the church, there is truth. In the church, there is a special knowledge of God. Inside of the church, there is an insulation from sin and fellowship that you won't find anywhere else, inside of this institution only. A child should learn to love this institution, and specifically, they should realize that not all religious institutions are the same. Not all churches are God's church. A child should know this. Not all people who consider themselves to be Christians really are Christians. A child should learn this. Another example I'll give you. I don't remember being taught this, but I remember knowing this. Long before I was ever baptized, I remember driving down the road and we'd see a church on the side of the road. And I would ask Mom and Dad, I would say, "Now, is that a good church? Or, you know, is that one that we would go to?" And they would say yes or no, and they would explain why. Or, you know, we'd be driving down the highway, and we'd see a Church of Christ. And I'd say, "Mom, hey, is that a good one?" And sometimes they'd say yes, and sometimes they'd say no. I don't remember them teaching me that, but I remember learning it. And I think it's very important that all children grow to learn that, understanding that the institution is special, that we are God's own special people. Love the church in the sense that they will love the institution. Secondly, love the people. A child should be taught to love the people in the church. And again, this subject also has many extremities. Loving the people in the church means loving to meet with the people in the church. A child should learn to love the people in the church the most. Not only in the church, but love people in the church the most. If the church is operating as it should, a child should be taught to find their closest friends from inside of the church. Now, I realize that sometimes this isn't always possible, but this is the ideal. We love each other more than we love anyone else in the world. And so the natural thing is that we'll find our closest friends inside of this institution. And so this brings me to an important subject, which is sometimes a very sensitive subject. A child, and this is one of those subjects where it makes me nervous to talk about it, but I think it's important to talk about it, and I think we'll agree. A child should be purposefully and proactively taught that they should only marry from inside of the church. This is part of loving the church. A Christian cannot with a good conscience, or, in my opinion, based on the Bible, cannot with God's support marry outside of the church. A child should understand this. So here's what the Bible says on the subject. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 39, discusses this topic as it pertains to widows. Paul instructs them, "A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes." Just anybody, right? What's the end of the sentence? "Only in the Lord." In the New Testament, Paul taught that if someone was a widow, they had the right to remarry, but they could only marry in the Lord. They could only marry a believer, only in the church. In defending his apostleship, Paul also mentions that he is allowed to marry as long as he marries a believer. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5, he says, talking about himself and Barnabas, "Do we have no right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles, the brother of the Lord, and Cephas?" Paul was not married, and he wanted to make sure, though, that people understood that he could marry if he wanted to, so long as he married someone who shared his convictions in Christ. So we know that widows are only to marry from among God's people. We know that the apostles and evangelists could only marry from among God's people. Not surprisingly then, when we get to 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul says to all Christians, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever?" Now, is Paul talking about just any kind of relationship? Well, of course not. If that was the case, we'd have to remove ourselves from the world. He's not talking about just any kind of relationship. He must be talking about the relationships and the fellowship that matters the most. Relationships like marriage. Is this anything new in the Bible? That God's people should marry from among God's people? Not at all. This has been taught from the very beginning. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 2 through 4. This is one of the most basic tenets of the old law. Deuteronomy 7, verses 2 through 4. "And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you," that's the idolaters from the land of Canaan, "you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them." And then verse 3, specifically he says, "Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, or take their daughter for your son, for they will turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly." Even in the Mosaic law, children were to be raised. He talks about children specifically. Children were to be raised with the understanding that they would marry from among God's people. There were no alternatives. There were no special circumstances. What was the only time a Jew could marry a non-Jew? It was only when the non-Jew became a Jew first. The same thing is true for Christians today. Children should learn this, parents should teach it, and parents should not support marriages that don't fit God's standard that He provides in the Bible. So children should learn to make sacrifices. They should learn to love the church. And another thing that the world has made very difficult for us, children should learn that the body is holy. Children should learn that the body is holy. The Bible explains that our bodies are holy because our bodies are not our bodies at all. Our physical bodies, not just our essence, but our real physical bodies, came from God. They were created by God, and therefore God teaches that our bodies belong to God. Paul explains in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 through 20, "Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? Do you know this?" he says. "For you were bought at a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." So I have a question. Are you more careful with your own things or with someone else's things? You're always much more careful with someone else's things. You know, I might break one of my own tools and it not be a big deal, but if I were to break the same tool that belonged to somebody else, I'd really feel bad about it. This is the lesson that Paul is trying to teach us here. Anytime we misuse or abuse our bodies, we should know that we are disgracing God's own property. We were bought with a price. We're the temple of God. We're the residence of the Holy Spirit. And therefore, children should learn that their bodies are very special. A child should be taught that their body is a holy gift from God. It should be used, adorned, and clothed accordingly. Specifically, we're talking about two subjects: abstinence and modesty. Concerning abstinence, a child should learn before it becomes a threat. A child should learn that premarital sexual activity is a serious sin that comes with serious consequences. Fornication often causes disease of the body. It potentially destroys families. And God promises a life of fornication will not have a happy ending. Is this something that affects young people? Absolutely. I may have read these statistics to you before, I don't remember, but I think it's worth reading again. According to a study released in 2003, by the age of 20, What percent of all young men and women do you think will have engaged in premarital sex by the age of 20? 75%. That was in 2003. 75%. So that means, on average, within 2 years of leaving your home, your child will have already fornicated. So what do you think is the average age for the first time that someone engages in premarital sex? 17. Before they are even out of the house. That's the average age. And I hope we as a congregation can make sure and show those statistics to be incorrect, at least so far as the church is concerned. Each year in America, 40% of all babies born are delivered to unwed mothers. Abstinence is a very important subject that children absolutely should learn. They should be taught proactively, not after the fact. Very closely connected to the subject of sexual immorality, of course, is that of immodesty. I've talked about this subject before, so I'll keep my comments brief, but I do think on this subject, on raising godly children, on what children should know, this is something that we definitely should remember, because the world is not going to help us. Clothing communicates our character, whether we intend for it to or not. Clothing says something about who we are, both to God and to the world. Our attire is an outward sign of the inward condition of our hearts. You can look at someone and know something about them. When Clayton comes to church with a golf shirt on, I've got a pretty good idea that Clayton is a golfer. When Mike comes to church with an Eat Beef shirt or something like it, I don't know that you've ever worn an Eat Beef shirt, but some shirt like that, maybe I'm thinking of the bumper sticker on the back of your truck, you know that maybe Mike is a cattle farmer. Our clothes say something about us, and we know this. This is the teaching of the Bible, even. And like all of God's laws, children should understand this, that clothing says something about our character. In the scriptures, this is true both figuratively and literally. Figuratively, clothing is used to symbolize the character of an individual. For example, Proverbs 31 verse 25 talks about the virtues of a woman, saying strength and honor are her clothing. That's interesting. Job chapter 29 verse 14, I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. In the Bible, clothing is used as a metaphor for real virtues like honor, humility, and justice. Now, why is that? How does that make sense? Clothes are on the outside. Humility is on the inside. So what's the connection? The metaphor makes sense because like humility isn't just on the inside. Humility is something that you can see by looking at someone. This is true of metaphorical clothing, and it's also equally true of literal clothing. Someone can be identified and characterized by their attire. For example, Proverbs chapter 7, verse 10 speaks of the attire of a harlot. That's interesting. Way back in Proverbs chapter 7, Solomon said, you can identify a harlot by the way that she dresses. And even before that, in Exodus chapter 28, this outlines the clothing of a priest. Certain people dress in certain ways. In a very real way, the way that we dress communicates our character. The way that we look on the outside can be an image of how we look on the inside. If we let the world teach our children how to be modest, we are going to be in a world of trouble. We know that the making of a Christian child means making sacrifices. We know that a Christian child should be raised with the understanding that they will be different from the rest of the world. Modesty is a good example of this. We wear clothing to cover and conceal our bodies because we have something holy that we're not going to share with just anyone. Clothing is designed to cover us, not to accentuate us. This, unfortunately, is not the attitude of the world. The world often makes no bones about it. Clothing made by worldly-minded men and women, the clothing that we wear, is often designed with the purpose of inciting sexual desire. Now, of course, that's not always true, but sometimes it's true. Clothes that look good are often equated with clothes that look sexual. And I know I've read these here before, but it's worth reading again while we're on the subject. I found a few quotations that I think are very revealing, excuse the pun, about how the world thinks about clothing. These comments are specifically about swimwear. So here's what one just generic secular source said about men's swimwear. They said men's swimwear is now being designed to accentuate men's bodies to advantage. I don't think I want to know what that means. There is now a lot of designer swimwear for men on the market, such as Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, etc. And they say if you want to look good, even if your physique isn't the greatest, men's swimwear has the popular board shorts, which hides a lot of figure flaws. So, they say, show off what you want to show off in your bathing suit. Hopefully, that's not our attitude when we try to dress ourselves, but that is the attitude of the world. Show off what you want to show off. Concerning women's swimwear, a different source says this, talking about some of the more common types of ladies' swimsuits. They say the most common type of swimwear is the two-piece and tankinis. The tankini swimwear styles is the most trendy and popular swimwear hitting the market. Depending on your body type, certain swimwear is designed to enhance your best features, whether it be your long legs, wide shoulders, bottom, or bust. I hope that no one in this room gets dressed with the idea of accentuating their long legs, wide shoulders, bottom, or bust. Unfortunately, when the world designs clothing, specifically swimwear, that's the kind of things that they have in mind. These sources aren't advertising their clothes on Christian terms at all. According to them, clothing is a way that you can accentuate your body. God says, cover your body. The world says, show it off. And if we as parents don't teach our children otherwise, that's all they're going to learn, is what the world tells them about how to dress. Things like tankinis and one pieces are usually considered relatively modest by worldly standards, but even the world, at least in this one place, acknowledges that these kinds of clothing are one more good way of looking sexually appealing and enhancing your bust, bottom, or legs. This is a very sensual and dangerous attitude, and we shouldn't be surprised that we find it in the world. We can teach our children how to dress, or we can let the world do it for us. So most of you know my standard on modesty, and all of those comments aside, remember this one thing. I'm not necessarily suggesting that you adopt my standard, but I am saying have a standard. And of course, I'm not saying that I don't think you do, but it is important that we have a standard. Every household should know where the hemline should be. Every household should know this is what you can wear and this is what you won't wear. And make sure that that standard is based on the Bible. So as we close, there's just one more passage I want to read. Ben read this morning, or mentioned it this morning, and on the subject of what children should learn, this makes a very good point for us. In Matthew chapter 18, the passage comes from verses 1 through 6. We'll look at verse 5. Jesus says to those that were surrounding them after he'd called a little child into him, he said, "Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a millstone hung around his neck and if he were drowned in the depth of the sea." I'll be a parent in September, Lord willing. That's pretty cool, but that's also terrifying at the same time. And maybe you remember those feelings. Because I'll have a brand new person. This person won't know anything. They won't know anything except for what I teach them. Everything they learn will be the things that I show them or tell them. They're a blank slate. The things written on their heart will be the things that Joanna and I personally write on there, or the world writes on there. So how am I going to do this? Joanna and I will be personally responsible for shaping this child into a servant of God. And if they're not a servant of God at the end of their life, I don't want it to be my fault. As Jesus explains, there potentially are consequences. So how am I going to do this? What am I going to teach him or her? These three things are a good place to start among the many things that you already know. Teach them sacrifice, teach them to love the church, and show them that their body is holy. Thanks for your time tonight. Bob, do you have a closing number for us?
Yeah, 473 in the red book.
473 as we stand and sing.